Hi, I'm Jim Barracks. I am indeed an alcoholic. I bring you all greetings from Marina Del Rey, California. And I got to tell you, this has been a fabulous flight. I'll tell you. Went down to the airport this morning. My flight had canceled. They sent me on another one. I got to Seattle. My flight was canceled. They said, you got to wait for another 3 hours for the next flight. I started looking in the departure area back to Los Angeles. See, because I'm a runner. I have always run all my life. I ran up until I came into this program. I ran, you know, and I'll give you a little idea. If you're new to the program, I can tell you that I identify as an alcoholic, but I also used to smoke too many cigarettes, took too many drugs, ate too much food, spent too much money, got married too damn much. But we do get well. I haven't had a cigarette in 17 years, haven't had a drink in 19 years, and I haven't been married in 21 years. So. So someday I'll get around to that not spending too damn much and, you know, not eating too damn much, but hell, that's all I got left. Oh, Lord have mercy. Patrick, thank you very much for picking me up, you know. It was fascinating. It takes a little while to get acclimated to a new area, you know. As we're driving down the street to the hotel, I kept seeing these Washington license plates on cars, and I'm wondering, is there a convention, all these out-of-towners? Then I realized I'm the out-of-towner, you know? Felt separate and apart from one more time. Oh, well. Joy, thank you for having me up here. I appreciate it. I give you a little idea. I came into the program, and I was not this suave, handsome, debonair gentleman you see in front of you. My sponsor insisted I tell you exactly what I was like when I came in. I was 44 years old. I had shoulder-length hair, headband, beard and a mustache, puka beads. Anybody remember puka beads? Rings on every finger, a print t-shirt with a big red tongue hanging off it, and bell-bottom jeans with sandals and jingle bells on the sandals. Now you could hear me coming down the road, ka-chink, ka-chink, ka-chink. What I hate to tell you is that I was then and still am a local Allstate insurance agent. You were not in good hands. Lord have mercy. You know, it's not the way it started out, you know. Now I'll tell you, I was one of those kids that when I was 8 years old, my folks moved me up from a little farm down in Virginia, moved me up to the Tenement Projects of upstate New York, where I had to learn to fight with a switchblade at the age of 8, and I started running. And I learned to run and not trust anybody, you know. And at the age of 10, my folks broke up, and I used to go out and hitchhike around the country. And I'd go to one state to another to be with relatives. I'm running. At the age of 12, my folks went out on New Year's Eve, and I found a bottle of red wine in the closet. I drank the wine, I had fun, I threw up, and I passed out. Got to tell you, 32 years later, the night before I came into AA, I was drinking red wine, had fun, threw up, and passed out. And my life is a series of ditto, ditto, ditto. But somewhere in there, give you a little background. At the age of 13, my father molested me. At 14, my stepmother molested me. At 15, I lost all my front teeth in a gang fight. 16, I ran away permanently and said, that's it, I'm done. It's me against the world, you know. 17 years old, I came over to the house, knocked on the door and said, Mom, sign these papers. I'm going into the Air Force. I'm going to become a man. She signed the papers, and 3 days later, I was in Sampson Air Force Base in Lake Geneva, New York. It was about 20 below zero, and I knew I had made a bad career choice. Now, typical, I started running away. Now, the Air Force, though, is very nice. They send people after you to bring you home. Free of charge, you know. They even bring handcuffs if you want, you know. And I kept running away in the Air Force so often, they had to take my stripe constantly. I might just as well have had a zipper on my stripe because it was on and off and on and off, you know. On my 18th birthday, they shipped me over to the Philippines, and I landed in the Philippines, and I went into town, and I met her. She was beautiful, she was wonderful, she was a bar girl, and we set up camp right away, you know. And shortly thereafter, she got pregnant. I don't know how that happened, but... And, of course, the Air Force wanted me to come back home. And I said, no, you know, I've got a baby on the... I can't go home. And they said, well, you've got to go. So what did I do? I ran. You know, my girlfriend and I took off to the Tulis back there in outside Manila. And, you know, until they sent a couple of nice guys to get me and bring me back. And, you know, and I spent a little time in the stockade and tried to slice the sergeant with a bolo knife. So they sent me back to the stockade for a while and... told me I was going to come home with a general under honorable conditions. But meanwhile, I went into home, back into town, and my new wife was giving birth that night. And the midwife wasn't there, and so it was me and her and a baby, mixed three. And I'm sitting there terrified with my new baby son and wondering what the hell to do. And the midwife came and took the baby, and 2 months later, I was being shipped out and waving goodbye to my wife and my son, and I knew I'd never see him again. You know, it was just... So I came back and did the only thing that I could do. I got married 3 months later to somebody else. You know, and after all, I like to switch my emotions from one to another. You know, I can't do it by myself. I've got to switch to somebody else. So, and that lasted for a while, and after 5 years, I moved back. We had a couple of more kids. Keeps on happening. I don't know how, but moved out to California, and 2 weeks after I was out here, I went down to the Palladium and I met her. See, there's always got to be a her. That was another fix of mine. See, I couldn't face the world on my own. I had problems with relationships, just three types: with myself, with you, with God. Other than that, I was okay. There are no others, in case you're wondering. And after 10 years of marriage, I was age 36, and I moved out, and I moved in with my stepson. Now, up to age 36, I had never even seen a drug in my life. Didn't know of anybody that had any, wouldn't have recognized it if I had seen it. Moved in for a week with my 18-year-old stepson. First night there, he says, Jim, you gotta try this. He rolled El Mondo joint. Turned down the lights and put on the strobe lights and little Jimi Hendrix. And he said, you smoke it like this. I took one toke and I could feel my hair starting to grow long. I'm going to be a hippie. Yeah. It's another way of running away, you know? So that first night I asked him, how much is this? You know, and it was that cheap old Mexican dope just before Paraquat. It was like 10 bucks a lid. You know? See, and I thought that was the answer to everything, because I wouldn't have to drink anymore. But that was that raspy old stuff that, you know, you had to have a beer between each joint. And when they introduced you to this drug, wonderful marijuana, did anybody tell you about the munchies? You know, when you're down at like Pink's or Tommy's chili burger place about midnight, and you're swaying there with the other dopers. Just waiting to scarf down that double chili cheeseburger. Then you go home and pull out that frozen Sara Lee chocolate cake. I have a feeling you folks up here have had the munchies too. All right, it's universal. Now, my stepson remained my pusher for the next 8 years. We kept the money in the family, so to speak, you know. And so I went back to him and I said, "Stuart, I'm putting on all this weight. I'm really getting bloated. What can I do?" He's, "Do like I've been doing. Take these little white pills." Now, he wouldn't lie to me, would he? So I bought a few hundred little white pills. I started popping these things, and he was right. I lost 50 pounds in 2 months. Just melted off. After a while, I went back to him, and I said, "Stuart, this is really fantastic. You know, I'm going constantly. I lost 50 pounds in 2 months, and I'm up all weekend. I come home after work, and I party down, and Monday I go to work, and I haven't slept. What can I do?" "Take these big white pills." "I take it somebody here knows about Quaaludes." "Oh, I needed Quaaludes. Oh, I am naturally hyper. I could use a Quaalude now, you know. Man, I was just so hyper, and he gave me that. It was like putting foam on a fire. It was just boom, just like that. I used to love to go out and cruise. You know, I lived in a technicolor world at that time, you know. After a six-pack of Michelob and a couple of J's and say two ludes just to mellow out, I go out and hop into my 71 Barracuda, pop her into first and cruise around. About 5 miles an hour. And then I'd stop and I'd just rear-ended somebody. But I hit him so soft. They just waved to me in the rearview mirror. So I'd sit there and rest a while. I used to love the lights, you know, when you're sitting there and you're just kind of watching these lights kind of going from green to yellow, then red, then green, then yellow, then red. That's Technicolor. That was my life. And I thought that's the way it was. That was the way it's supposed to be lived. And gradually, friends, meanwhile, another wife came in and left. Getting hard to keep track of them after a while, you know. This one didn't have a baby, so I remembered that one, you know. Lord have mercy. And friends started dying off, you know, and they were committing suicide, you know, and people were dying. I mean, Lennon was just killed recently. That's the Beatle Lennon. I've been around somewhere for a long time, but not that long. And when he got killed, I felt so sad that I took off for the day. And I came home and I set up an altar. And I burned incense. And I played Beatles music all day long. And when I woke up in the morning, I wondered why, because I didn't even like the Beatles. But I wasn't going to give up a chance to cry and get drunk, you know? And somewhere in there, one morning, I was watching Days of Wine and Roses. And I'm half snockered, watching it on telephone. And I'm sitting there watching it on TBS, and I'm sitting there crying over those poor bastards and their drinking problems. And this is 9 o'clock in the morning. And I said, someday, if I ever have that problem, I'm going to go. Someday. You know, and shortly thereafter, I got very, very tired of my life. And I went home and decided to commit suicide. And I pulled out 50 10-milligram Valium and put them on the coffee table. Brought out a bottle of Stoli and a six-pack of Michelob. And I says, I'm just going to mellow out. So I went into my record room. Now, all good dopers had a record room. You may call it a second bedroom, but we called it a record room, where we had thousands of records, and we knew every one of them. And I went in, and I pulled out my 10 favorite albums, many of which of artists that had gone before, like Jimi Hendrix, and Janis Joplin. And I figured I'd play a little mood music. And I started it off with Freddie Fender's Wasted Days and Wasted Nights. Man, he gets right to the core, you know? Starts at Wasted Days and Wasted Nights. And I started popping a little blue Valium and crying. You know? About midnight, I got long-distance telephonitis. Well, nobody from around the block is going to understand you as half as well as somebody back on the East Coast. And of course, if it's midnight here, it's 3 a.m. back there. I remember one call. I don't know why he did what he did, but when I called up, I says, hi, is this Joey? And he says, yeah. I says, this is Jim. He says, Jim who? I says, I used to sit behind you in second grade. They just don't understand, you know? Tried to call up my kids back east to let them know that it was their mother's fault that I had deserted them 20 years before. They didn't want to hear it, you know? I called up my ex-girlfriend that I'd just broken off with 2 weeks before. And I said, Wendy, I'm committing suicide. The world doesn't appreciate me. I'm a genius and nobody knows it. So goodbye forever. And I hung up and I waited. Spent almost 20 years and she still hasn't called back. Watch out who you pick as your lower companions. Oh, Lord have mercy. But somewhere that night I had the stone cold sober thought, like, Jim, this is a life and death decision you're making. Maybe you better sober up before you do it. And see, I'd done that thousands of times. You know, standing in the bar, shooting pool, sucking down beer, and suddenly be struck stone cold sober and say, Jesus, I got to do it all over again to get back to that mellow. Because all I wanted was to be comfortably numb. You know, that's all I was looking for. I didn't want to throw up. I just wanted to be comfortably numb, like Pink Floyd's The Wall, just to be comfortably numb, you know. So I staggered over and I turned off the stereo and I crashed. And when I woke up, I knew I was in big trouble. So I called up ex-wife number 4. She knew all about psychological problems. She'd just gotten out of Patton State Hospital. Better living through electricity, you know. Oh. She says, Jim, I've been telling you for years, you've got psychological problems. You need a shrink. So I called up a shrink and I says, here's my problem. I just tried to commit suicide last night. My boss is trying to fire me. My family won't talk to me. My girlfriend won't come back to me. And I think I might be a budding alcoholic. And she said, come on and we'll talk. And for the next 6 weeks, I went in there and I told her precisely what my problem was. It was my mother. It was my father. It was those four ex-wives. It was that boss. It was the ex-boss. It was the one before that. It was society. It was the Air Force. Nah, 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 nah. And not once did I see those three fingers pointing back at me. And one day, I'm walking out of the office. She says, Jim, don't you think you ought to do something about your drinking? And I thought, how come I'm paying you $75 an hour and you tell me I got to go someplace else and stop drinking? And I went home and I called up AA because I remembered Days of Wine and Roses. And the guy told me, just don't drink today and go to this meeting tonight and you'll be okay. And he says, pick up the big book and pick up a little yellow card called the 20 Questions. Now I asked Patrick if you had it around here and he said no. But that's okay, I brought my own. And I had Patrick take it at dinner time, so this is his afterwards. Says, are you an alcoholic? Now there are 20 questions here. I answered yes to 19. Well, only one did I get wrong. It said, have you ever had a complete loss of memory as a result of drinking? I said no, I couldn't remember. Problem with this card, it says if you have answered yes to three or more, you are definitely an alcoholic. Lord have mercy. But I kept that card in my big book as my bookmark, and I still have it in there now almost 20 years later. Because every once in a while, those first couple of years, I'd be at a meeting and somebody would talk about being arrested 122 times and seven felonies, and I'd say, not me. Or they'd say they'd been through 20 detox centers, and I'd say, I never went through a detox center. I came in and sat on my hands. I didn't dare tell anybody that I had a problem. Least of all, I didn't want to tell my company. You know? Or somebody will talk about they lived on Skid Row for 5 years, and I say, I never lived on Skid Row. And I'd be driving home thinking, gee, maybe you're not really an alcoholic. And I get home and I pull out that 20 questions, and I'd see 19 out of 20, and I'd say, oh, yes, you are. Patrick? I also had those posted on my AA website. But I put that card in my big book and I listened that night and I went home and I pulled out chapter 5 my first night and I checked off 10 of those and I just as I took the steps. I still had the check marks in my book to prove it. Needless to say, my sobriety date is about 3 months later. Now, a friend of mine got killed in a holdup. It was as simple as that. One of the Allstate offices got hit down there, and a good buddy of mine got shot in the head, and somebody in the office was popped out some Valiums. And I said, oh, let me have a nice little blue one there. I popped that, and my sobriety date dates the day after that, which happens to be my belly button birthday as well. So I came back and I started listening and I started trying to do these steps and I got involved. That was the biggest thing of all, is I got involved. See, I'm a very, very selfish person. Number one, I run, and number two, I don't give a damn for anybody else. I don't want to do anything for anybody. My first night there, somebody said, Jim, on Monday nights, we want you to come up and set up chairs. And I said, no. And they said, you don't understand, dummy. That's the way you stay sober. I said, oh, okay, what time do I go? And I was there. And on 2 weeks later, somebody asked me, we need somebody to clean out the coffee urns, and my hand was raised. Now, I don't know why. I don't drink coffee. But I was back there very happily cleaning out the coffee urn because I wanted to feel a part of. First time in my life, I felt a part of. I'd come to meetings and I'd sit there and cry. And people would say, why? I'd say, I'm so happy because I'm accepted. I don't have to do anything. I don't have to prove anything. I'm just here and I'm accepted. And that's what I needed. When I was a month sober, I went over to an old timer and I says, look, in the big book on page 1415, it says that when Bill got very, very discouraged, he'd go to a hospital and talk to people. When can I do that? He says, well, you can't do it until you're 6 months sober. I says, fine, where do I go? I went down when I was 6 months sober and signed up for 11 panels. I wanted to spread this disease wherever I could. Now, my first year, I went celibate. I don't recommend it, but that's what I had to do. So I had all the time in the world. So when I was 6 months sober, I went down there. You know, I started taking the steps, and little at a time, some things really screamed out at me. Like, for instance, one of the things on chapter 5, it said, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being. Now, when I got into that, I discovered the troubles with my relationships. Admitted to God for forgiveness, to myself for understanding, to another human being for humility. I just took care of the three problems with relationships, with myself, with God, and with you, just with that fifth step. A little while later, I discovered something that a very, very holy man said a couple of thousand years ago. He said, we are not punished for our sins, we are punished by our sins. How true that is for us, because inside each one of us, God gave this thing called a conscience. And that conscience was inside there nagging the hell out of me all the time. I'd wake up after a drunk, and next morning it would be just sitting there waiting on the bedpost, waiting for me to wake up, saying, you know what you did last night? How about last week? How about last year? How about 5 years, 10 years ago? And I'd have to drink to keep the little bastard quiet. But I come in here and you say, I can't do that anymore. So I've got to take these steps. And a little at a time, I felt forgiveness. I still, you know, when I was 6 months sober, somebody took a chip off their chain. And I started crying because it's the first time in my life I'd ever cried for another human being. Because I felt so sorry for him. When I was 1 year sober, I got up to the podium and I said, okay, here I am. 45 sober, single, sexy, and celibate. Where to from here? I called up my sponsor. She's a sweet old broad. And she, I said, where is she? I've been good for a year, damn it. Where is she? She's getting ready for you. Your sponsor ever tell you dumb things like that? Sure enough, 2 weeks later, I'm over at Brentwood. There's about 400 people milling about, and our eyes locked. Like magnets, we drew each other across the room. It was an ex-girlfriend of mine. She looked into my eyes and she said, Jim, I've got to make amends. I said, fine, your place or mine. She moved in the next day. 2 weeks later, we were engaged. And 2 months later, we're calling our sponsor saying, how can we get out of this? And that was the first of relationships. You know, I had a 4 month one and a 5 month one and an 11 year relationship. And, you know, it's all been wonderful, you know. I learned not to run in relationships, you know. But I was going back to that hospital and institutional committee stuff. When I was about a year sober, I remember going down to L.A. County Hospital, and we used to take these guys from the alcoholic ward and bring them down the hallway into the meeting room. And I remember going up to this one guy who was pushing his IV rack down the hall, and I went over and I looked into his eyes and I said, how are you? And he says, I don't know. And I cried again. First time in my life I felt true compassion for another human being. I didn't understand what the word was, but my sponsor told me. You know. When I was 3 years sober, I remember going down to a friend of mine, an ex-girlfriend actually, called me from Wyoming, and she says, "I can't make it back. I'm snowed in. Can you take my panel to Chino, youth training?" And I says, "Okay." So I picked up the panel, and I didn't identify as an all-state man or anything like that. I just introduced the panel, and I sat there very quietly. And towards the end of the meeting, a young man came over and sat down next to me. He says, "Hey, man, I got to talk to you." I said, "Okay." He says, "I'm going to be in here for a long time." I says, "I understand that." He says, I killed somebody." I says, "Yeah." He says, I needed the money for the drugs." I says, "I understand." He says, "He was an insurance man." I says, "Oh." He says, "Yeah, he worked in an Allstate office there in Los Angeles." I says, "Was his name Paul?" And he says, "Yeah, how'd you know?" I says, "Because I remember when Paul got shot, I took my last Valium that day." And we finished, and we all held hands and said the Lord's Prayer. And the drive back from Chino to home is about an hour and a half. And I'm driving back, and the panel's, you know, just yakking away. And we get, meanwhile, my head just won't quit. It's just, now, why me? Why me, God? Why me? And I got home, and I hit my knees, as you've told me to do. And I kept praying, "God, why me? Why did he talk to me?" And a voice came over, just as clear as my voice is right now. Said, "Jim, were you understanding the kid?" And I said, "Yes, Lord." "Were you accepting the kid?" And I said, "Yes, Lord." He said, "Were you loving the kid?" And I said, "Yes, Lord." He said, "How much more do you think that I understand and accept and love you?" And the weight of the world lifted off my shoulders. I was 47 years old, and for the first time in my life, I could look in the mirror and like what I saw. I had never been able to do that before in my life. You know, that's the type of experience that we have when we come in here. See, I don't know what my higher power had. Now, I thought I was just coming in here just for a little while, just to get the heat off. Get a little jingle back in my pocket, get a new girlfriend, and off I would go. It's okay, ladies. I've been looking around here tonight. A little geographic undesirable, but you know, maybe we can meet halfway, say Portland. Well, if Miss Wright isn't here, surely Miss Wright now might be here. My life is unmanageable, totally unmanageable. You know, that boss that was trying to fire me, I've still been with the same company now for 32 years, got my own office, my own staff, got 8 websites. Can you believe that? 8 websites. And that gets me to my next subject about family. When I was 5 years sober, my 21-year-old daughter in Los Angeles said, "Gee, Dad, can I come over and stay with you for a while? I'm having trouble out here with Mom." And I said, "Sure, come on over." New Year's Eve, she goes out to her party, I go out to my party, and New Year's morning, she's passed out on the bathroom floor. I can't get in. So I rush off to a meeting. That's what we do, 6:30 in the morning. Pick up a 20 questions. Like you've got, Patrick. Sat there, waited for her to wake up, gave her 20 questions. She took it. She said, "Gee, Dad, not bad. I only got 14. "I got a program for you, honey." January 25th, she took her 14-year cake. You know, so we do make it. Now, I tried to make amends to the 2 kids back east, and I could hear them in the background, "We don't want to talk to him." So I says, "Okay, I'll leave him in God's hands," you know. And I knew I could never contact that kid over in the Philippines, so I contacted this group called the Pearl Buck Foundation, and I started sponsoring a child in the Philippines for about 16 years, you know, and because that's the way we make amends. We find another way to do it. The kids back east, I was speaking down in Barstow. That's 20 miles beyond any lengths. Once a month, they have a speaker meeting, and, you know, it's a big family affair. Everybody brings together, you know, pot roasts and everything all spread out. It's fascinating to speak, and everybody's 200 people are masticating at the same time, you know. But driving back through fog about 2 hours, it's about midnight when I get home, and the phone's ringing. Pick up the phone, and I says, "Yeah, who is it?" "Hi, is this Jim Barracks?" And I says, "Yeah." He says, "This is Jim Barracks III. How are you?" And I says, "Who?" He says, "This is your son back in Buffalo. I figured we hadn't talked in 25 years. I thought I'd reach out and see what you're really like." And we shared for 45 minutes. And at the end of that time, he says, "Hey, Dad," he says, "I know this is strange to say, but here's my phone number. Feel free to call anytime you want to." You know, we got together, you know, and I flew back there and I made personal amends and saw one of my grandkids back there. And I know I don't look old enough to be a grandfather, but I am. Truth be known, I've got 8 grandkids and 1 great grandkid. So I asked him about his sister, and he says, "No, she's not ready. She's not ready for you." I says, "Okay, fine." You know, I was 14 years sober. I get home and I get an email. "Hi, Dad. I just went to visit one of your sites. Good pictures on there. Here's my phone number. Feel free to call anytime you want to." Signed, Kathy. So I called her up and I says, "Hi, this is Jim." She says, "That's okay. You can say it's Dad. We know you're dysfunctional." And that's the current word that we're using nowadays. Now, I got to tell you that I've been living by myself for 21 years, and I still live in a dysfunctional household. Used to have a little sign up on my mirror, "The problem starts here," you know. So we got along, you know. And when I was, this one you don't get, Patrick. When I was, I'll tell you exactly. August 28th, 1997. "Greetings. I was just wondering if you could please help me out. I'm looking for possible relatives long lost. My father was stationed at Clark Air Force Base, Angeles City, Philippines, in 1954. His name is Jim Barracks, da-da-da-da-da-da. If you would please contact me, my adopted name since I was 3 months old is Eduardo." I wrote back to him, "Hi, Jim, I've tried to reach you for years." We all feel like that most of the time. So 3.5 years ago, I knew he'd never come here. And as we're emailing back and forth, I told him that I was in the Alcoholics Anonymous, and he says, "Gee, Dad, how did you do that? I've tried 1,000 times to stop." And I said, "Do you read English?" He says, "Yes." And I says, "Fine." Anybody got a 20 questions? I flew over to see him, and sure enough, he's practicing alcoholic. He got 16. You know, I brought him 20 questions and a big book, looked up Alcoholics Anonymous and his little city there, and in fact, I was a guest speaker. And he got to know me, and I got to know him, and they got to know him, and he says he's still sober, so I don't know if he is or not. But imagine if I hadn't stayed sober, would I have been able to bring the message to him? You know? That was a trip and a half. I was going to go, but now I don't like to travel, I got to tell you. Did you know that I don't like to travel? And one of the guys that I sponsor, I'm lucky enough to sponsor a ton of people, said, "Hey, you shouldn't have to go over there by yourself. Why don't I join you?" So he came with me. So while we were at it, we also went to Hong Kong and Bangkok and Singapore and just had ourselves a ball. Did I tell you I like to travel now? Bought my Rolex over there. Yeah. You know, in a little at a time, my life gets better.